All right. Well, today we're talking to Commissioner Laura Cavanaugh, the 34th Commissioner of the New York City Fire Department and the first woman to hold the position. We're very excited about this conversation at Ride On, of course, in the Micromobility Podcast. I want to give a bit more of a brief background on Laura before we begin. So Laura Cavanaugh was raised in California. She graduated from Whittier College with a degree in International and Public Affairs. In 2014, she joined the FDNY as Assistant Commissioner of External Affairs and was promoted to First Deputy Commissioner in 2018. She was appointed to the Fire Commissioner position by Mayor Eric Adams in October 2022. Mayor Adams, very excited. He actually spoke at one of our events a couple of years ago, so it's great to be back in New York, and also nice to speak with a fellow California native. As Fire Commissioner, Laura Cavanaugh oversees the day-to-day operations of the largest fire department in the country with more than 17,000 employees and a $2 billion budget. Cavanaugh is also a leader in FDNY's response to major emergencies. She has overseen the department's response to the Ebola outbreak of 2015, the 2020 COVID-19 pandemic, and numerous other natural and man-made disasters. We're excited, of course, to have Laura Cavanaugh on the show today, specifically to talk about battery fires, where according to the FDNY, batteries have led to, I had the number at 180 fires. I was corrected, the number is now 187 fires. And tragically, 14 people have died so far this year in New York City from these battery fires. So with that, Laura, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Let's just start with a bit more of your background and your story from actually hearing from you. You know, you're really in an inspirational story. The listeners would want to know, like, how you got to where you are today.
So I guess it's a little bit of an unusual journey in terms of, you know, coming from so far away. Mm-hmm. But I would say that, like most commissioners, I rose through the ranks of government, like most of the commissioners before me. And so, you know, as you mentioned in my bio, I had started at the department working on special projects, whether it was, you know, dispatch, working with some of our families, working on technology, human resources, and eventually over the course of a decade, very gratefully landed in the commissioner's spot.
So let's dive into the subject at hand, which is micromobility and battery fires. I'm saying micromobility because a lot of the media calls it e-bike fires, mm-hmm. kind of probably the most popular mode, but we know that this goes beyond e-bikes and into many modes of small electric vehicles, scooters, mopeds, motorcycles, unicycles. And so the first question I have for you is, when did you start noticing the battery fire trend specifically with mm-hmm. small electric vehicles?
So I want to give credit to our fire marshals who began identifying this trend really before anyone else. I think in 2021, they began tracking it. When I became commissioner, it was one of the first things they brought to my plate. So this was one of the first things I was made aware of, is how precipitously these have gone up year yeah. over year. So even between when they began tracking them and now, they've mm-hmm. gone up about 40% every year. So this is something that's been, since I arrived, certainly been top of mind. Yeah. But really, it's our fire marshals who first identified that there was something unusual happening in our fire data.
Yeah, and just to speak to that growth, so you mentioned it there, but basically it looks almost exponential from 19. There was, it seems like, at least in terms of the number of fires, 30, then it goes up to 44, 104. 104 in 2021, and then 220 in 2022. Mm-hmm. It appears, you could tell me if I'm wrong, but it appears in 2023 we might have some flattening on that growth mm-hmm. from 2022. But yeah, real incredible growth off of a, you know, what sounds like a pretty small number when they first identified, yeah. But continues to, of course, go up. So a lot, again, in a lot of the popular narrative in the media is a lot of these fires are coming from delivery workers. I've seen estimates. We've talked a lot to a lot of different delivery companies on our show. Anywhere between 65,000 delivery workers in New York City, I've heard up to 100,000. Again, these aren't necessarily substantiated numbers. But, you know, it seems like a lot of them, of course, are using micromobility vehicles to distribute, you know, basically run the city. I don't mm-hmm. know how a city might run without delivery workers. But is there a trend you see in the type of vehicle that's being used that's catching fire? Anything specifically there?
So I'd say there's a few trends we're seeing. And as you pointed out, this is often ascribed only to delivery workers. Yeah. I would not say it's that. You know, mm-hmm. part of it is that the proliferation of these devices among all citizens has gone up. And a lot of the, especially initial devices, came in unregulated, mm-hmm. Including things like scooters, other devices you mentioned that are more what I would call like recreational yep. vehicles. So that's one issue, is just them not being regulated in the first place. I think the reason the delivery workers receive so much attention, and rightly so, is not only are they very dependent on these, and as you point out, especially as New Yorkers, we get a lot of things delivered, mm-hmm. but a lot of the ways in which they are required to use them make it a particularly risky use of the device. And that's, you know, no fault of theirs. I would say, you know, that it's really the structure that the apps have given to deliveries has mm-hmm. really pushed a use of these bikes, which was not what they were meant for. And that's really where they can become very dangerous. So some examples I'd give are altering a device. So we mm-hmm. know that some delivery workers alter the device either to go faster or to have more battery power so they can have less charges. But the yep. altering of any device, even a regulated one, makes it much more dangerous.
Yep.
Also things like, you know, damaging the device. So if it has dents in it, if it's exposed to say snow or salt, which again, you get a lot of in New York City,
yep.
that can make the device far more likely to catch fire. And then, you know, a lot of what we've also seen is people putting together what I would call sort of like a Frankenstein bike, where they're using a charger, a battery, and a bike that didn't come together mm-hmm. and weren't manufactured together and aren't necessarily compatible. And that's where we see a lot of the overheating issues, which is where they catch fire in homes. So I think, you know, it's right that the delivery workers get so much attention because they're really dependent on these devices to make a living. So they often don't have a choice to yeah. use a safer device, but also a lot of these devices really weren't created for the way the delivery market has unfolded. And I think that's a lot of what we have to address and not just put that on the backs of the delivery workers.
You have this market established by delivery workers. It's sort mm-hmm. of a pay for performance. So mm-hmm. if you're a delivery worker, what are you gonna do? You want the most throughput you can get. So it sounds like modifications are a big deal, maybe uncapping yeah. To go faster and or you know, trying to preserve more battery life. You mentioned the, you know, we know a lot about the DIY market around mm-hmm. conversion kits. So taking a normal, what we call acoustic bike, turning yeah. it electric. And then also another thing that I've heard a lot about is the idea that the battery swapping actually happening inside mm-hmm. of like apartments. So, yeah. you know, multiple charged batteries at the same time, because, you know, you never think as a normal user, oh, I need to go, you know, 140 miles where I can route back to maybe an apartment yeah. and grab another battery. But in the world of delivery, you probably easily cover that kind of ground. And so instead of like waiting for another charge, just go in and grab that mm-hmm. other battery, which must be terrifying. I mean, basically that's an apartment full of yeah, matchsticks in a matchbox.
Exactly. As you point out, they sort of created an underground market, not just for the bikes themselves, but for battery charging.
Yes.
That's really unsafe. So I've actually gone on some of these inspections that our special task force has done. And exactly, that's what you see when you walk in, you know, that there's hundreds of batteries charging. Many of them look as though they've been altered or tampered with, or they're not UL certified, so they're probably dangerous to start with. But also, you know, that other things may have happened to them. They're not in a location that's fire safe. They're, you know, often overloading the electrical outlets. We have this happen in a lot of older apartment buildings
sure.
that aren't equipped to have that much, you know, electric charge happening at once. And that's, you know, not only really dangerous, but I think the reason it's so scary is when it's in a private apartment, you know, we can't inspect inside a private apartment or home. So, you know, we really worry that a lot of this could be happening outside of what we can
yeah.
ever sort of get access to.
It's such a massive problem.
Yeah.
Like, I would be curious. So, like, you know, we often think about with micromobility, we try to study history, right? We look at the movement from horse carriage to car mm-hmm. and, like, what could we learn from that, as it seems like this is a very big revolution we're undertaking with small electric vehicles. I would be curious, as a department, do you have any historical context of a similar kind of problem of this kind of scale and scope? And like you're saying, like the idea that mm-hmm. you can't inspect, maybe you can inspect the bike shops, but you can't inspect private people's apartments.
Yeah.
Like, this seems like such a massive problem. Like, what's a,
yeah.
is there a good equivalent to it that you can look at and like, oh, that's how we attacked it, that's
yeah,
how we
set
it?
Yeah, I don't know that there's a perfect equivalent, just because, like you say, sort of the move to electrification is happening far more quickly
mm-hmm.
Than I think a lot of other innovations or changes. But I would say that it is always true that often new innovation has public safety impacts that aren't planned for. And, you know, part of what the fire department does is consistently drill and train, plan for the unexpected. But I would also say we've really, over the last few years, created a new model where we are partners with the Department of Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
They actually have a first responders lab. And what we're trying to do in that is actually work with new technology on looking at it from a public safety angle.
Mm-hmm.
So even in this case, one of the things that they're helping us look at for sort of the longer term, you know, obviously the shorter term is just regulation, right? If we can get these to be certified, they're going to be safer. But over the longer term, they're helping us look at, you know, how do we study once a whole block is electrified, right? Once
mm-hmm.
we're not just talking about e-bikes or scooters or e-mobility
sure.
anymore, you know, what are the impacts if there's a fire there? They're also helping us look at recycling, because one of the issues we've really come across is that if you have hundreds or thousands of unsafe batteries, you know, non-certified or tampered with, they're unsafe no matter where they are. Yes. So, you know, for the fire department, the first move is to get them out of a residence, but they have to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so we're working with them on safe recycling, you know, safe storage. So, you know, I think in some cases we have to prepare consistently for the unexpected, but there's also more we can do. And I think we are doing now to try to plan a little bit more for the future and what we do with these over time.
And on that, so you mentioned some of the partnership you have, like Department of Homeland Security, it sounds like. I also know you testified with the CPSC, Consumer Protection Safety Commission. And, you know, I think you were, you know, I think in some of the testimony I watched, clearly they were very intrigued by your story and of course being so forthright. And I think being, as quoting them, I think they basically said they were impressed how ahead of it you are. Clearly you're dealing with it. So you're, you know, part of being ahead of it. Do you feel like these agencies like CPSC and others are moving fast enough? Or, you know, so, clearly we can only move so fast, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think they're receptive and I think they're moving faster than normal. But I think with government, you know, expediency is always the challenge, right? And in some ways, government is meant to move slowly and cautiously. But when we have something like this that is, for us, as you mentioned in the numbers, you know, getting worse by the day, we really need them to move faster than is normal. So, you know, we continue to lobby them. That's why we went down there, but we're also continuing to lobby them now. They're actually coming up next week to visit us.
Great.
And we're also speaking to Congress, who has looked at this from a legislative angle. And so we believe we have to sort of keep banging the drum. Otherwise, it may take, you know, years for this regulation to take effect, and we want it to be done far sooner than that.
Yeah, and so and on the, that point, so one area I'm curious on with your maybe your fellow commissioners around the country, you don't hear that much being talked about with other cities. Like I, you know, subscribe to e-bike fire alerts or, you know, other scooter fire alerts. So I see isolated pockets. I think there was a big fire in Miami in an apartment last week. But do you, you know, clearly there's vehicles all over the country. Do you, clearly New York would be the biggest, but do you feel like you're getting support from other cities where this is a challenge, or do you think they're just, it's not on their radar yet, or you're putting it on their radar? I'm just curious where
that is. So I think it's all of the above. We see cities that are more similar to New York have the e-bike battery issues. Actually, San Francisco is one of them. It's a much smaller city, so fewer fires. But actually per capita, they're having just as many, if not more, than we are.
Interesting.
You know, but San Francisco is also, especially the West Coast, unusual in that it is a denser city. You do get deliveries. Same thing in places like Chicago and Philadelphia. Other cities like Miami or LA, there's a lot more outdoor space. You know, and one of the primary safety things that we ask people to do is put these outside. So if that's possible, that can make a city a lot safer. In New York, it's not possible for most residents. We also are seeing that a lot of departments hadn't been tracking this. So we've actually been working with the national U.S. Fire Administrator to try to get universal national tracking of this. We think what might be happening is a lot of these fires are happening in cities, but they're buried in the data as electrical fires, which are a common form of fire for most departments. But these are, they unfold very differently than your typical electrical fire. So we're trying to also get folks to track this.
Fascinating.
And I do think it's, you know, it's worth saying there's some things about New York that probably make this worse just based on our size and our density and the number of things we have delivered. But I also think New York tends to be a bellwether, both as a fire department as a, and as a city. You know, if you recall, we got hit by COVID first of all the major cities. And so we do think this will eventually be an issue everywhere, especially as I mentioned, with everything becoming electrified. If we're not ahead of making sure that electrification is certified and safe and that first responders know how to put these fires out, then I think we risk eventually it hitting every city, even if it's not all about bikes or mobility. It will be something at some point if we're not ahead of it.
How do you catalog it? So what is the what is the actual like category definition of this type of fire?
So ours are extremely detailed. So, you know, e-mobility is its own category, but we also break it down. So we know for every one of our fires, whether or not it was a scooter, a bike, a moped. We also know what type of battery, was it certified? Was it with the charger? The only caveat I'd say is sometimes the fire is so bad you can't tell some of that stuff after the fact, but to the extent that it can be examined, and we can find that out. We are tracking as much as possible, even, you know, what was the use of the residents? Were they a delivery worker? Were they a recreational user? So it's our goal, since we have so many of these, and we're probably going to be the ones with the biggest data set, to be able, especially with the Consumer Product Safety Commission, to share which manufacturers, which types of uses, which types of, you know, sort of modifications are causing the most fires and the most fire deaths.
I love, okay, that's very cool. I don't have any of that data on me. I would be curious, and, you know, sorry to put you on the spot, but is there so you broke it down by mode, by delivery, non-delivery, by certified, non-certified, any sense of that data off the top of your head?
There are certain uses and certain non-certified manufacturers that show clearly to have more of these fires than others, and that is actually shared with the Consumer Product Safety Commission so that they can take action on that.
Okay, and then how about mode? Any trends there, e-bike versus scooter versus moped versus motorcycle?
That I'm not sure. I don't know. I can check. I don't know, but I would say generally the biggest thing we see is modification. So if those things came as a certified device and weren't modified, they generally don't, you know, burst into flames. If they were modified in some way or damaged in some way or weren't certified to start with, that's what we actually see makes the biggest difference.
Yeah, that's okay. So I think, you know, for everyone listening or watching, you know, there's a very clear concern around DIY. I think we've seen that even in London and in China. And so, you know, if you have a DIY vehicle, I think there's some very real concern there. And then clearly, whether or not it's UL certified, also some very real kind of use cases there. And then, you know, if you're doing any sort of modification and or any sort of extraneous use, like a delivery type style, probably some, you know, indexing more towards potentially there being a fire. How about like the urgency of, hey, let's try to get these vehicles off the streets, out of the apartments now. Yeah. So as I understand it, you know, there was a trade-in program going on led by the Equitable Commute Project, which was trying to get people to kind of raise their hands, mostly focused, I think, on delivery workers to turn in their vehicles, either DOI or maybe those aero vehicles for a turn vehicle certified with UL certification. And the UL certification is both the bike being UL 2849 certified and the e-bike battery being UL 2271 certified. As you know, New York Times, unfortunately, we've been battling with them a little bit, I feel like, on with our podcast, came out and said, hey, that this program is not working. I think they identified that three vehicles had been traded in, you know, potentially 60 to 100,000 workers, probably not a huge hit rate. I also saw, though, that just last week, the council has now approved a trade-in program, which sounds like it's just a clean trade for what is potentially a damaging vehicle. We track every incentive program that the government in the U.S. comes up with, either city, state, or federally, for any sort of micromobility incentives. Our feedback on seeing the first program was, it's too confusing, there's too much, it's too hard to get, and it's too expensive. This new program that that sounds like the council's approved seems more in line with what I would hope for, but I'm just curious your opinion there. Is enough being done to urgently get these vehicles? Is there too much red tape in the way? What would you want to see if you could design an incentive program?
Yeah, I think like you said, I've heard the same things from delivery workers, that it's too complex, it's too expensive, you know, that there's still a pretty high fee you have to pay to exchange the bike. And even there's, I know, compatibility issues, right? There's so many different types of bikes and batteries. There's not always the battery or bike available to them for their bike to trade in. So I certainly hope the council's bill addresses that. We've spoken to them quite a bit, so I think they know about some of these concerns. I still think it remains to be seen whether or not it's really gonna be successful. And as I've mentioned before, I think part of the issue is a lot of the way the delivery workers are using these is not what bikes are made for. So even a new bike may not have, say, a charge that lasts long enough for your average delivery worker. And that's a place where we've really urged all of the delivery apps to get involved and help both fund these programs, but also help address some of those sort of infrastructure issues. You know, is there something else that delivery workers need that's different than the regular consumer market for bikes? Yeah. So I think, you know, I do think that these trade-in programs will get better as time goes on and people see this. But right now, to your point, it's not happening fast enough for us. You know, we're seeing that most delivery workers are still using these sort of do-it-yourself or otherwise less than safe bikes because they have to, because it's all they have.
Right. And you know, I think literally this week, Instacart is going public. You know, it's a multi-billion dollar company. You know, and clearly, you know, I was just in the subway to see the ads for Fresh Direct. And of course, all that's being delivered. Some of that's not all micromobility vehicles, but, and you know, you have DoorDashes, et cetera. How much pressure is on them to solve this? And well, I guess maybe the question is, do you think there's enough pressure on them to solve this?
Yeah, you know, I know we've been putting pressure on them to solve it. I don't know that there's enough pressure yet, only because I would say we have not seen it be resolved. And so I think until it is, I'd say more pressure is required. I think, you know, one of the things that comes up a lot is that there's a lot of deliveries outside of the apps. And so I think the app companies would say that, you know, not all of this is sort of on them. And while that's true, what I would say, you know, to your point, they've sort of created the market for it, though. They've created the demand where we're seeing people, you know, even delivery workers have said to me that they know that the bike's not safe, but they don't know what other choice they have, right? And so I think as long as that's true, we need more from the apps who've really created the demand that was not quite the same. You know, getting your food within an hour was acceptable 5 years ago, and now it's, you know, 15 minutes or less.
Yeah.
That's the kind of demand that the apps have specifically created, and it specifically propels less than safe use in order to actually get things there on time.
I think that's really interesting where, you know, like for instance, the Ubers and Lyfts, a lot of, you know, they would never allow an unlicensed driver on the road, right?
Yeah.
That's just like, that's totally understood.
Yeah.
Why you'd allow potentially an unlicensed micromobility vehicle, I don't, you know, that to me seems pretty cut and dry.
Yeah.
And then I know there, like you're saying, there are other apps. There's a company here in New York that we interviewed not too long ago called Wiz, and you know, all of their bikes are UL certified that they give to their delivery workers. But again, this is a small startup. This is not the behemoth in the space. And I think, like you're saying, I think that everyone will follow their lead. They have enough market share and enough attention that if they move this route, I think it's natural that you're going to impact a broad swath of that market. I think our message, and we'll do this, of course, at Micromobility America, is talk to these delivery companies and try to apply, you know, I don't want to say pressure in a negative way, just like, hey, we know regulation takes a long time. We know, you know, getting these things so they're not coming over potentially from areas where we get batteries, it's going to take a long time, but there are immediate things that we could do.
Yeah.
And in the private market, we can move much quicker potentially.
Yeah, exactly. And as you point out, you know, they have direct access. They know where their deliveries are happening.
100%.
They know who they are. So regulation takes a while, but they have an ability to, you know, make an impact on their workforce right away.
Yes.
So I think, like you're saying, you know, I'll probably be cornering a lot of them at the conference in a nice way. But I do, you know, what I find when I have these conversations is they don't always realize how much that market that they've created has really focused in on these less than safe devices.
Yes.
And so I think once they understand that and once they sort of know what they can do about it, I have seen some movement. I just think it's not enough.
Yes, I agree. So let's talk a little bit about I'm just a New Yorker. I live in the city. I'm reading about these fires. Mm-hmm. You know, I think New York, for instance, e-bike sales is growing around 35% year over year. So you're talking about real growth, right? And, you know, kind of maps to maybe the growth in fires. What, if I'm just a regular New Yorker, I want to buy an e-bike for my child, I want to buy an e-bike for myself, like what's your advice to them in terms of making sure that's a safe purchase?
So a few things, you know, one, don't assume if you get it online that it means that it's certified. I think there's a mistaken assumption that major websites like Amazon are only selling certified devices, and that's not the case.
Yes.
And so, you know, one, don't assume that. You know, two, there are in-person bike shops where you can actually go ask if they're certified. And so that, I think, in a lot of cases, is a safer way to do it. You know what you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd ask anybody, you know, that has a bike right now. A lot of people have said, I'm not sure if my bike is safe. Sort of to give it a once over, you know, does it have a UL certification? Are you using the battery and the charger that came with the bike? Do you see any damage, any dents, you know, is the battery getting really hot when you charge it? Those are all signs that either you bought a not certified bike or maybe that it was damaged along the way. And then we're asking a lot of New Yorkers to just make sure that if they have to have one of these in their homes, you know, especially the delivery workers who are saying it's not an option to get rid of it, it's not an option to have it outside if they don't have outdoor space, to make sure you're using it as safely as possible. So, you know, never charging it when you're not watching it or when you're sleeping, always making sure that it's out of the way between you and the exit of your building. And what we've seen a lot in these fatal fires is that sort of logically, people have their bikes in their hallway. That's where a lot of us keep our regular bikes.
Yes.
But in the case of an e-bike, because there's so much flame when they catch fire, it's almost inevitable that if you have it in your hallway and it does catch fire, you can't get out.
Yes.
And so we're asking people to move it out of the way, even when they're charging it. So were the worst to happen, they still have an ability to get out and keep them and their families safe. And so I think, you know, doing those things, doing sort of a check of your bike to see whether or not it's certified, whether or not it appears to be operating safely, and then making sure when you charge it, you're charging it as safely as you can. I think that will help until we know that we're only getting certified bikes through the market.
Got you. Okay, so I'm being a good New Yorker. Mm-hmm. I'm taking Commissioner Kavanaugh's advice.
Yeah.
First question I say, my bikes aren't UL certified because, yeah. you know, I think it's like 80% yeah. of bikes aren't. What yeah. do I do if yeah. my bike doesn't have that UL certification on it?
Yeah, I mean, I would encourage you to get rid of that bike. Okay. You can find out safe disposal on the sanitation department's website. You know, there are, as I mentioned, there are bike shops that you can go and actually, you know, inspect the bike yourself, see that they're certified. So those are often a safer way to get the bike than on these online retailers where yep. we're not certain where they're coming from. I do realize those are often more expensive. And so I think that is part of the issue in the marketplace that we're talking about, where I think the apps can help in sort of underwriting the cost of the certified bikes.
Yep.
Ultimately, what I'd say, though, we do know from UL that certification of a bike only costs about 10 cents per device.
Yes.
So once the whole market is regulated, I think we'll see bikes at all price points that are regulated. That's not the case right now.
Yeah.
But definitely would encourage people who clearly don't have a certified bike to make sure that they dispose of that bike or do not, you know, leave it charging in their apartment.
So the first thing is, if you don't have UL certification, there's potentially it's time for a new bike.
Yes,
and exactly. as Commissioner Kavanaugh is mentioning, you can go to any bike store and they're gonna understand this. Mm-hmm. One other thing I just wanted to ask you about, because I, you know, seen the videos, I don't think people understand this well enough. If there is a fire or a battery, I've seen people try to put it out.
Yeah.
You know, what do you do in mm-hmm. case of an actual fire with
the So
with
I think that's battery? A great point. I think people think when they think fire, they think of what you see typically where it starts as a smoldering fire and then it grows. These e-bikes, I really think it's better if you can watch the videos, obviously, if you'll see online, yeah. but really to call them an explosion.
Yes.
Just due to the nature of sort of the density of the cells in the bikes, when they catch fire, they explode. And so there's a tremendous volume of fire both around the bike itself. It's usually impossible to get around. Often it can spread quickly to other places because these cells that are on fire, you know, spring off of the bike and set other things on fire.
Yep.
I would definitely encourage people not to try to put these out themselves. They're incredibly difficult even for our members to put out who are trained and experienced. I think that's why it's really important to make sure your battery and your bike are not in an area that really you will have to go by in order to get out of your apartment. The best thing you can do is to get out of your apartment safely.
Yep.
Call 911,
yes.
let the fire department know that it's an e-bike. That's especially important for our members to know because yep. these are particularly dangerous for first responders, and let them come and put out the fire knowing what it is.
One other thing, just very tactical to the end user. A lot of people like to take their batteries off their vehicles, mm-hmm. whether that's because of theft, maybe they just, you know, want to store it somewhere. Mm-hmm. Can you talk very briefly about the idea that, like, carrying it in your backpack, letting it hit the ground?
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned salt and corrosion,
yeah.
of course, here, like in New York City. But people, you know, should not, this is not a toy. Don't throw it around. Don't toss it, you know. Hitting in the ground, like things like that can
yeah.
really upset the cells.
Yeah, you know, any damage to the battery itself. So even if it's removed from the bike, and a battery can actually burst into flames, you know, not charging or not plugged in if it's damaged. So I think it's important, one, that people know that even once they take it off the bike, it's still a fire hazard, right? So don't leave that backpack in the hallway. Don't leave that backpack in a sensitive area. But also, like you mentioned, you know, be careful with it. And I think constantly be inspecting the batteries that you have. If you see that it's been dented, if you see that it's been open, cracked open or damaged or exposed to, say, salt, that is a battery that you should probably dispose of and get a new one.
Let's just really briefly again zoom out. So we're in the future. We've got UL certified batteries all around the city. But you know, if you talk, for instance, I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs in China. What they'll mm-hmm. say is, like, in most cities, you cannot bring the battery inside the apartment mm-hmm. building. You know, there's storage outside. You know, I talked last week to Shabazz Stewart, who's the CEO of Unipod, which is mm-hmm. actually a local company doing bike storage, beautiful bike facilities
yeah.
outside. What's your vision on the future, even in a UL world, certified mm-hmm. world? Do you think it's actually safe to bring small electric vehicles inside your apartment, or do you think they belong, you know, outside,
yeah.
contained in certain types of warehouses?
I think it will always be safer for them to be outside. I would also say, and you mentioned some of the models that we've looked at, when we've looked at other countries' models, not only has that proven to be safer, but it's also helped the very sort of conundrum we've talked about with delivery workers, where safe battery swaps are available, mm-hmm. right? So you can just swap one safe battery for another safe battery and keep going on your shift. And we've seen that in other countries. I would say, you know, Mayor Adams set up a micromobility task force, and that's a lot of what the larger task force is looking at with us as partners. So what is the infrastructure that we want to be building for the future, right, when it comes to bikes and batteries? And even, as you mentioned, when it comes to sort of the larger question of electrification. So electric cars that are parked in garages, you know, there's all these different types of devices that wall, they're much more safely constructed. We do know where they're coming from. There's only a few manufacturers of electric cars. There's still just always that question of, you know, for first responders and cities, how does that change the infrastructure? How does that change the way public safety agencies respond? And so the mayor's larger task force is helping us address those issues. So I think you will see it, the future of New York will have more of that natural infrastructure built in.
Okay.
So we won't have to face some of these questions, but as we've talked about here, there's still what happens in between, right? Yes. While we're building that infrastructure, while we're making sure these devices are safer, what are we asking people to do in their homes, and what can we do right now to make it a little bit safer if you have one of these in your home?
Yep, okay. Commissioner Kavanaugh, I know you're very busy. I have one final question. Sure. It's from the audience. I wanted to stay only on battery fires, but I do think this is an interesting question, and you're in the type of position that I think you can answer it. So back in California, I'm on our Safety and Traffic Commission, and one thing we always say is sort of all micromobility infrastructure leads through the fire department. So if you mm-hmm. really want to get something done, ultimately the biggest potential objective is not mm-hmm. necessarily the population. It's more the fire department and fire safety mm-hmm. and making sure that the roads can be, response time can be good, and it's actually, yeah. all your box are checked. So that's something that we think a lot about. The question was, in Europe, they're showing, for instance, in Paris, response times. I think in Paris, they've reached under 7 minutes, which is sort of like a multi-decade record mm-hmm. now. And one of the reasons is because the infrastructure with bike lanes is allowing for the first responders to mm-hmm. go through the bike lanes. And also, they've been able to reduce congestion through mode shift and park cars. Mm-hmm. You can't park the cars there anymore. Also in Paris, but also a lot of European cities, you have smaller vehicles, mm-hmm. smaller fire trucks. So just curious on the question being, you know, when would New York ever potentially do this? When mm-hmm. do you think in the US we would move to smaller vehicles like we potentially yeah. see in Europe?
I mean, part of it is maybe a question about sort of American culture mm-hmm. that I can't answer. I think we like big vehicles here. What I would say here in New York City, a few things. One, we see, just like these European countries, that traffic is the number one thing that increases response time.
Yes.
And in fact, response times went way down during COVID yeah. Because there weren't cars on the road. And we do see, you know, there are some streets where we've done this sort of experimentation, as they've done in other cities, where, say, it's a car-free street or it's emergency vehicles only, such as 14th Street that yep. runs across Manhattan.
Yep.
And that, for our first responders, is a huge gain. They can now get across town far more quickly than they could before. So we are part of this larger conversation about, you know, our city streets and what's on them. All kinds of things come into that. You know, bike lanes, the outdoor dining sheds that yes. actually made it much harder for us to yes. navigate the streets sure. for a while. So we're well aware that even though, you know, people may not think of sort of Department of Transportation or the streetscape and the fire department, that actually for us, it has a huge impact on yes. our response times. And I will say that we do actually have smaller vehicles. So we have done some experimentation with this. We actually have something called an ASAP, which is an ambulance that's able to navigate spaces like Times Square
yeah.
Any of our parks in order to actually get through to patients where, you know, a typical vehicle probably wouldn't be able to get around, you know, lights and sirens or not.
Yep.
As you well know, some places in New York are just too
trafficked,
jammed to get around. So we're definitely looking at it quite a bit and seeing, you know, what sorts of vehicles, what sorts of devices, and what sort of changes to the streetscape are going to affect emergency response. And just would say lastly, especially since I'm going to be at the conference and there'll be so many people there, is I do think all of these issues really point out that we have to be working together. Like when it comes to innovation, yeah. It's just not a one industry or like one entity problem. And there's often a lot of unexpected problems down the road. And I think the later we get involved, the harder that can be. You know, what I hear from a lot of tech companies is, you know, we created this great product and we're about to roll it out and you guys said no.
Sure.
And so what I say is involve us early, you know, involve us early so we can give you some sense of what the safety issues are gonna be and you can build around that. You know, we acknowledge that innovation is gonna happen,
yes.
that it's critical. And frankly, innovation has saved the lives of many first responders in terms of innovation
sure.
we've had in the agency. So we wanna be a part of other people's innovation conversation so that public safety can be a part of the puzzle and not just sort of a no at
yes.
the end of the process.
Excellent. I think that's totally something I've learned from being on the commission is like when you can get, and they the fire department has started to join the commission mm-hmm. meetings even, so it's been great. And something I definitely learned is get the fire department involved early, not
yeah.
as a last check, but actually at the beginning
yeah.
and part of the design process, and it really helps. Okay, so Commissioner Kavanaugh, thanks so much for your time. Just to recap, you know, we've got some, you're working hard on long-term plans, both federal regulation, state regulation.
Mm-hmm.
You're working hard on incentive programs to try to make it as easy as possible to get these vehicles off the road. For people at home, New Yorkers, or really any American, look for the UL certification,
mm-hmm.
remove batteries if they're damaged. Be very careful with DIY kits and mm-hmm. any sort of modifications to the vehicles. And thank you so much for everything you're doing and for your time today.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
See you in California.
Yeah, see you in California. We'll be right back.